I will say the prayer and pledge of allegiance. Okay. Let us pray. Our gracious Heavenly Father, we do thank you for this beautiful day that you've given us. And Lord, we thank you for your many blessings. Lord, as we continue throughout our day, we just pray that everything that is said and done will be to glorify you. Lord, help us to give us the wisdom to do the county's business today. And Lord, bless those that have not been vaccinated yet. Keep them well and help them to understand that they vaccination is the way to go. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Stand with me, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First thing on our agenda is an update and discussion of the 2021 Board of Equalization and Review meeting date by Tax Administrator Jody Ray. Jody, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
In talking with the county manager, we are looking at scheduling the first meeting of the Board of Equalization and Review at the next meeting, April the 26th. Under the statutes, the board has to hold its first meeting no later than the first Monday in May and has to adjourn on or before the third Monday following the first meeting. In the past, I think we've convened and adjourned in the same day due to having very low or no appeals at all, but that's up to the discretion of the board. But the first meeting, we're looking at April the 26th. And I have to advertise that at least 10 days before that date. So we need to decide if we want to convene and adjourn at that meeting or if we want to continue for another meeting or two.
How many appeals do we have?
None. Even if we select one day, the board can continue to meet and hear any appeals that were timely filed, and timely filed as they were filed before the meeting adjourned. So even if we decide one day and all of a sudden we had a bunch of appeals come in, the board could still meet to hear those appeals.
Okay. It's my opinion that we should just do one day. Does anybody have any different opinion? Hearing none, so I guess we will convene and adjourn on that.
April 26th.
Yes.
What time is that meeting going to be at?
6 o'clock.
That's my regular commissioner meeting.
Regular
also.
Commissioner's meeting.
Okay, yes. Good.
Okay. Is that all, Jody?
That's it for me.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, yes. All right. My apologies to the audience listening in. We are going to do a roll call now according to the agenda. So my apologies. So Ron Robertson. John Trent.
Here.
Greg Atkins.
Here.
I am Tammy Lee. Ron Wesson is not with us today. Okay. Thank you, County Manager, for reminding me. Next on the agenda is Ms. Robin Payne. She is our consultant with our tall glass of water, which is better known now as Bertie Beach, I guess, until we find a more permanent name for it. So, and she's also going to be talking to us about a grant award also. So, go for it.
Good morning, everyone. Happy spring. Good to see you. Mm-hmm. We were happy to say that we received the grant from North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency. And this is to initiate research to outpost with research, identifying where the needs are. Once that report is compiled, then we move forward into implementation and submitting the applications. So Mr. Vaughn, Tracy White, and myself are scheduled for two of these sessions that are coming up in the next 2 weeks. And then we'll reach out to municipalities and set up local meetings in that we're going to try to meet. Very happy to have received this. 12 Loss of Water Update. We started a cleanup. We haven't been down there in the last 2 weeks. We'll continue to do that through the summer. And that is cleaning the road, the approach just directly in front of the path to the beach. Clearing an 11-foot area down to the beach, so it's easier to walk the path. We'll leave the vegetation on the sides, we'll keep it mowed, but that'll prevent any further erosion from the outside. And then when you get down to the beach proper, that's right in front of you, we'll keep that clear. So
you'll be what?
We'll keep it clear.
Okay.
Excuse me, Monica, we move that so the audience can see. Is that the what? Maybe I can help you.
Oh, let them move. It might be easier if they move.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, Mike.
Yeah, it's
going to move.
Hey. That ain't working.
Okay.
Because of your.
Freeman,
yeah.
You want to move back so you can see? How you doing? Doing good, man. Y'all want to be able to see that? You know.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
A little bit more. All right.
Yeah, they're moving. Yeah. That's good.
That embraces the top of the path, as opposed to keeping the structure completely on one side. And the idea is that when folks are sitting down right here for picnicking, and that's where the tables are, then the house is really important. And then on this side is where the restroom is. So here, that's kind of Pavilion option one. Option one is the preferred option, less expensive, and the flow or the layout of the roof is preferred for rainwater capture and how it deflects and spreads out to the area. We have picnic tables right here. These are fixed picnic tables. These are stanchions that collapse. And then we have restrooms here, drinking fountain, a bench with the community bulletin board behind it. This is HVAC, mechanical, and then here are outdoor showers. We are planning on getting rid of the posts that are there, and we would have emergency access through the structure right here. And Mitch has been working with vines on width and height of, you know, trucks and emergency vehicles and what we need to do for if we need equipment down on the beach. So here is a schematic design. It's not exactly what it would look like, but it's the general layout of the room and the vertical elements. We have restrooms on this side, picnic tables here. The elements that are horizontal are like barn wood, so it'll be rough cut lumber. Same thing with the inner roof lines, it'll be rough cut or a wood grain.
Let me ask you a question. You say a wood rough cut lumber. You might want to converse with them about using a composite material. So we don't have a rot issue, we don't have a paint issue, we don't have other issues that's going to be high maintenance. Trex makes a material that serves the same purpose.
This is a closer view. You can't see it. This is a closer view of option one. And then option two was a more linear roof line. Of course, we have the same, we have three restrooms, sinks, drinking fountains, and outdoor showers.
So the only difference is the roof line with these two options?
Roof line, yeah. I think this option one is more on a U shape. It hugs the entrance a little bit tighter. We have a side-by-side view when we get to Lost.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. And then there was a cut-up. And again, these are schematic, so there might be slight design configurations that will change, but this was a cutout to allow for emergency access going down to the path.
So this would be located at the foot of the path?
At the top of the path?
Yes.
Yeah, top
of the path. Yeah, sorry. Right. Gotcha.
And then they did a lot of research on the structures in the area. We've got, of course, barn wood, galvanized metal for roof lines, timbers. And then, of course, crushed aggregate, which would be a lot of our public space walkways. But they were taking those finished materials and moving them into what the final design elements are. So
you take a look at approach one, approach two. Mm-hmm. Look like maybe approach one has a flat roof.
It's not a flat roof.
There's it's not. Line. It has elevation on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That was preferred because you know the slope brought that water out into that area, that grassed area, and then deflected it.
So this end here would be the higher end.
Right.
Flat roof's not good for a project.
Any questions?
Okay. So, I mean, so their recommendation is approach one?
Well, the favorite, yes, is approach
the favorite.
One. The
okay.
less expensive. And the way that everybody felt that it flowed with the property lines better, it engages with the space, I believe, a little bit better. It fits the space. It's a personal opinion.
It looks more of a modern type building rather than your traditional with your A-line roof.
I like it. I like layout one.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that was my opinion too originally for both of them, but I'll explain that to you. Whoops. Oh, okay. So we do have the same. Okay, here's two. There's six picnic tables right here.
Just.
And then layout one. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Yeah, there's one picnic table. So. It's appearing to be contemporary right now because it's simplistic. They're just identifying roof lines, walls, the footprint of the structures. So that's why, and they're clean lines. So that's why it's coming off as looking contemporary. And I believe that once the wood finishes are in, it'll pull that character of what Bertie County, a lot of the structures want to. So
the gentleman that sent me all those suggestions for that area, I wonder what his opinion would be on this, because it's going to be much nicer than the steel gate that we have up there now.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, there was a lot of back and forth on do we keep the steel gate and then move the building back, and we were doing a lot to allow for keeping the steel posts, you know, so we felt like it was best to have the structure closest to the top of the pathway that immediately engaged with the ramp and the walkway that goes down to the beach.
So we're not concerned that vehicles, other than emergency vehicles, would use that access to drive down to the beach?
That has been discussed quite often, and it will not happen. So, right.
It will not?
It will not happen. It won't be possible to drive around.
But they can drive through.
They can drive through because there's keyed access for emergency vehicles, just like there's keyed access to open that gate that's there.
Oh, okay.
This would be keyed access to get through the space. Maybe what you're not seeing, these are collapsible stanchions.
So
they drop down if you have an emergency situation.
Okay.
But
I see now.
In the meantime, you can sit there and.
You know. Okay. Thank you.
Oops. So, do we have a one or a two?
What is the pleasure of the board?
I'm for one.
I like one just because if the roof is elevated where that, you know, and it has more space picnic tables. Yes. Use.
And I like one, so we have a consensus.
Vines is also beginning to work on four conceptual renderings, color renderings that we can use to with our funding package. And they're going to design a sketch for a multi-purpose community center, the pavilion with the stage, the camper cabins, and a hiking trail with the wetlands walk.
We'd like to, once those are finished, and of course we'll do the same thing, we'll present those to you so everybody can make a selection.
Let me ask you this. Are there any area of this set aside for fishing?
Which areas for fishing, you're asking me?
Yes.
It's really shallow down there.
Yeah, it's about really 24 inches to maybe 34 inches out. I don't know, maybe 100 yards.
Ain't deep enough.
Right. It's.
Now, I'm not a fisherman. So.
Okay. I'll just say.
I mean, you could go wet a hook, but I think that's all you would be doing is wetting a hook.
Okay. Now, we see some fishing paraphernalia down there, but I'm not sure if it was productive or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you waited out, or if you had a boat, you came
right.
On the
go
other
out.
Side.
All right. But not off the show. Sure. Okay.
I'm a Robin. I know I've driven you crazy with this, but I'm gonna go on record. How soon will we be ADA compliant? Now, probably shouldn't. Anyways. Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be the fall.
Okay.
Okay. And a lot of that is dictated by. Process, government paperwork process, the funding availability, and what our timeline is for our grant availability. We have one more grant to apply for. Vines is in the midst of, let's see, the survey is just about done. The geotechnical research is being completed. There have been quite a few.
But the path. Now going down to the beach is being worked on to make it easier.
Yes.
Okay.
It is. Okay. And how we've set it up is that when Dawn is down there, I think she's down there almost every day, she will call and let us know when it needs to be smoothed out. We'll get some.
That should help tremendously.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because if there's rain activity, then it starts to rivet or rocks. So I'm excited to see these next four renderings. I think it'll make a big impression. We'll be able to share everything with the public. Once we have those in place, we'd like to create a new project sign and update the website completely. Questions on that?
Robin and I have a meeting tomorrow morning on another possible grant opportunity with Dominion. So we'll be meeting down at the site. Any of y'all are welcome to join us. We'll be down there at 9:00 in the morning. We're excited about that opportunity and the possibility. And it could be a multi-year grant opportunity for us. So.
Well, thank you. Anybody has any questions, just shoot me an email.
Just thinking out loud, what y'all think? Maybe time to design and maybe build an entrance way to this place. Y'all think it might be time to have an entrance to this place?
Do you mean on Ball Gray or the?
Yeah.
Wherever the entrance is going to be.
Some of those renderings that I sent you from that gentleman might be an option.
And we did share those with the architects.
Yes.
I believe I'll put it on the list. What they're trying to do in the bigger picture of the project is make sure that each of these structures, there's a flow to the design, to the flavor of everybody.
I just think it is to bring attention to it.
That's right, Grant. Yeah, from Highway 17, that's right.
Where are we at with getting the highway, the DOT to do our sign at the highway?
They're waiting for us to tell them, but I have a question. We don't have restrooms down there yet. We're not ADA compliant yet. We don't have a ramp. Do we want to put up a sign to bring in more outside activity? Residents, citizens of Bertie County are using it, but
we had outside folks coming.
Pardon me?
Without any of that
infrastructure that you're discussing to bring in people that may be coming in from out of state, it could give the impression that we just have a dirt path. There's nothing here. Now it's a whole different animal. Then you're going to start having some complaints, and then we're going to have to be dealing with that. I think we need to get a little bit of that infrastructure, like bathrooms that she's been talking about, showing us before we get any signage up there. Other than maybe a sign on the side of the road stating that this is Virgin County Beach for our citizens.
We need something out there because I'm having to give directions on Facebook.
Well, I think if we do something
regularly,
as of that nature, that's okay. But when you have people coming in from outside the county coming in and there's portalettes down there, I think it gives Bertie County a bad look.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, we have folks coming, I know, from Pitt County because I spoke to them that day.
You know what I'm saying? I just think it's a put the cart before the horse.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
Now, I think a new project sign is needed to show people the structures that are coming and what the schedule is. That's
a project sign that has a layout on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you just demonstrated here.
Well, she had one at our kickoff day. If that could be put down there, that would be great. Just something to recognize it.
Yes, it's a big, it's like 40 inches by 6 feet wide. We'll completely redo that sign with all of our partners' logos from CAMA, the Part F, everybody, EEG. But I'm thinking we could wait until these renderings are complete and then get those on the project sign too. So citizens can vision what's coming, you know, what's getting ready to happen.
You get up.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Keep
thank
you updated you. By email.
Okay, thank you.
Next on our agenda is the Board of Elections voting equipment. We have Board of Elections Director Sheila Holloman and the Chair of the Board of Elections, Michael Freeman, with us today.
Good morning, Chairman Lee, Commissioners, and County Manager Vaughn. Commissioner Lee said, I have my board chairman, William Michael Freeman. Our board secretary, Reverend Anthony Ward, is here, and board member Michael Fields.
My apologies, Mr. Ward.
We appreciate you listening to us today. As you are well aware, our voting equipment has reached the end of its life. The equipment was purchased in 2016 with Harvard grant money. And due to the pandemic, we have now been awarded another Harvard grant that would help us purchase new equipment. We've used a portion of that grant money to install security cameras in our building. So we'll have roughly $40,000 left to help purchase the equipment. And in your package, you have a quote from ESNS, which is our current vendor.
Yes, Commissioner, it's on the right side of your packet. The first page is a letter from the state executive director, Board of Elections, but the second page shows the amount, the total amount of the grant. And as Ms. Holloman said, there's about $40,000 remaining. And then the last two pages are the quotes for the equipment and software that Ms. Holloman is mentioning. I feel like Ms. Holloman can talk a little bit more about it, but the first quote is just the total. And it shows you down at the bottom the payment terms. And the second one, though, is with financing.
What's the difference between the first one and the second? Because that's a significant difference, about $20,000, it looks like to me.
Right. So if you can see, the total purchase solution for each is $105,540. But the payment terms on the first page It says amount due within 30 calendar days of contract execution mm-hmm. of the $52,770. And then within 30-day calendar days of delivery of hardware and software, you pay the remaining 52, okay? So it's pretty much cut in half, but it have to be paid within about approximately, looks like 60 days. But on the second one, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Holloman, but the second one is with financing, and it looks like the an annual payment for a three-year term would be $37,752 over 3 years. And then over 5 year term, it goes up to $24,265.
And they have also said that if that $40,000 that we have for Harbor Grant, if we want to apply that to the cost of the equipment, then those figures would be different if we want to finance it. So this is not with the $40,000. That we currently have.
40. Maybe it'd be nice to have the county manager and the finance officer get back with us. If this is a mandatory thing, that we definitely need this equipment, that would be the best route for us to go.
In that session that we went to look at this company, they 75 out of the 100 counties
right.
Uses this company. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you on, you know, our equipment has reached its lifespan. But my concern was, you know, what is, if the state mandates it, are they going to mandate what equipment we use and what that equipment will be, you know. So this company having 75 out of the 100 counties was reassuring that in most likelihood, if they mandated it, it would be with this company.
That's a very good point. And the reason I say, the other thing is too, and I think the last time this came up, it was about $150,000 for the equipment, correct? And you said we replaced that equipment when?
It was purchased in 2006.
And then it ended just about 4 or 5 years ago and then decided not to do it.
Keep putting it off.
Well, okay. Yeah, they kept putting off the exact date when we had to replace the equipment.
And right. We still don't have to, right? Is that?
We still don't have to, but we are beginning to have problems with some of the batteries in the other equipment and the chips that we use to store the data on it. It's a PCMI card. Yeah, we are beginning to have problems with those.
And Ms. Holloman, I was at the meeting when they came and done the introduction and their sale. But I understand that some of the parts is obsolete now.
Yeah.
And that's what they shared with us at the meeting. Now, my point of interest would be if we could let the financial officer and the manager look at how much interest are they charging to finance versus, you know, one-time deal. If we got $40,000 to use on $100,000, they don't be too much difference, less $60,000. And how much money interest we would have to pay on $60,000 versus paying one-time deal. I'd like to know, for the tax purpose, people for the citizens anyway, to know the difference.
Okay, well, we appreciate your listening to us today. Any questions?
I do believe, you know, that it's time for us to go ahead and replace it, the equipment, but. You know, like Commissioner Robertson said, you know, what is the difference? And are we getting, paying a lot more for it with interest, you know, doing according to?
It's going to cost us $2,752 in interest per year on a 3 year plan.
He's our number man.
And more okay. than five.
Chairman Freeman.
Yes.
Right.
So and you're telling us to hurry up.
The interest rate is 8%. Madam Chair, the interest is 8%.
And that's too much. That's too much. 8% on the dollar is too much. Where the bank ain't paying them on by 1.25, you know, of 2.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I think we need to look at our options and, maybe go outside.
The finance officer take a look at. Yeah. Plus, that does not include applying the $45,000 to that number either. So
right.
Right.
Those numbers I gave you was without applying the information or the excess grant money, I should say. So
yeah, if when we come back on the 26th for our regular meeting, Mr. Finance Officer, do you think you could have us something, maybe some other options for purchasing this equipment? All right.
But Madam Chair, is the consensus of the board to purchase the new equipment?
I would say for me it is.
It is for me.
Okay. Wow.
The presentation was very impressive.
But I also want to get the rest of the information.
Yeah, right. We want the rest of the information because, because we hate to lose that $40,000.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to walk away from any grant money whatsoever.
No, not no $40,000 on a $100,000 deal. You know.
And I think we can find those other financing a lot cheaper.
Sure.
Than 8%.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Ain't no need to submit the money. You don't have to. If somebody gives you the grant,
yeah.
You know?
If we can find it cheaper, financing cheaper elsewhere, that's great. If not, then we'll know the answers. You know, we'll have the answers, and we can make an informed decision at that point on the 26th. And hopefully, Mr. Wesson will be able to be with us and be a part of that discussion.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Is Mitch with us online?
No, Mitch isn't here. He's at the vaccination clinic.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to do it, and I also have someone is on standby from DSS, Ms. Rebecca Neal. It should be on the call, but I have the information that I'm going to provide to you all in update.
All right. So next on the agenda is this. Disaster recovery update on this displaced family.
Commissioners, you're aware after the hurricane and tornado that we had last August, we were able to get a number of campers. And so we've had about 13 families in trailer campers located, some on their own property, some on property that we're renting. And to date, we also had two families who resided in the hotel for a while. And I can say as of today, those families are out of the hotel. I can also tell you that about 4 families have moved out of the trailer campers. And so DSS is doing a great job with case management and speaking with these residents and working with CADA. A number of these residents have received vouchers from CADA. And so the challenge has been, though, is, you know, finding somewhere for them to reside. But they are working on it. And so what I would like to do is to continue working closely with DSS and finding out exactly what options are being offered to the citizens. The contracts state that we will provide this option for 6 months to a year with an option to renew it for an additional 6 months. However, it also states that it is temporary housing, and if other options become available for those families, that they should absolutely take those options because it's temporary housing. We're not, you know, in the housing business. So again, I will be working with DSS to make sure that when these families find housing, find a reasonable option, that they take those options and not just stay in those trailer campers on and on unnecessarily. We're happy to provide that resource to our citizens, of course, but again, it's not, those trailer campers are not meant to be long-term housing. So as soon as somewhere is identified for them to go, we're going to encourage, and hopefully won't get to a point, but we could require them to leave if other housing options are secured. Yes, sir.
For some of those displacees,
yes, sir,
to relocate,
yes, sir,
but a lot of people would not leave their community, and they contacted me. I'm quite sure they contacted several other guys, John and Mike and all, but they would not. They do not want to leave their community. I will share with you this. If you could conversate with DSS,
yes,
about this conversation,
okay,
to help educate the people that they have to leave, mm-hmm, their community if it's just temporarily, mm-hmm, so that they can be in a house,
right,
versus a
camper.
Right. You know, yes, that's that. I'm telling you from experience,
mm-hmm,
Mr. Robinson, I don't want to live in Merrill Hill. Mm-hmm. 4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms.
Right.
No, it's not there now. Next person took it.
Right.
But, you know, I said, hey, maybe you can get back in your community at a later date.
Right.
Let's do this temporarily.
I tell people that on a constant basis.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a rental within 15, 20 miles where you're at.
Right.
Because rentals are such high demand,
right,
in Bertie County, then take it.
Right.
And then search for a place,
right,
that is going to be exactly or close to where you want to be at. And a lot of them don't, as you said, educating them, they don't comprehend this.
Okay. So August is the year mark?
Well, the tornado took place in August. They weren't in the trailer campers until October. So we're pretty much at the 6-month mark right now. Something else that I wanted to mention and get actually a vote on from the board is my understanding that in the past, when these devastation and different tragedies like these that we experience, this inclement weather that causes disasters like we experienced in August, the commissioners would waive inspection fees on the properties that need to be inspected in order for the families to re-enter. Does that sound familiar? If houses have to be worked on, have to be, pretty much, major construction has to take place on some of these homes that were destroyed.
Well, wouldn't that go for any house that is destroyed in any area then?
Yes, but again, it was my understanding that those inspection fees were waived so that those tenants or, the people occupying those homes didn't have to pay them. But if I was misinformed, please tell me.
I don't recall that. But
I remember some resemblance of that,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember when, but I do remember something where if a house was destroyed,
mm-hmm,
by any type of disaster,
right,
okay,
right,
that we did waive those fees as far as rebuilding, as, mm-hmm, far as anything.
Right, that's what I'm talking
when
about.
When it came to inspection.
Mm-hmm.
I remember something about that.
Did we do that after the Matthew floods?
That's what I was told.
I think we did.
Okay,
I just don't recall.
Yeah. Permit fees were waived. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it should be go towards any kind of disaster for any family.
Right.
And I think
if we're going to do it, yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Do you need a vote on that?
I think I would feel comfortable with that.
Well,
yes.
Then I'd make a motion for. I would make a motion for that.
Okay.
Permit fees be waived on anybody that has disasters of any sort where their homes are destroyed.
I'll second the motion.
In a state of emergency type disaster?
No, ma'am. I consider it any kind of disaster where somebody's lost their complete livelihood.
Fire, house fire, anything that take them out.
Anything, a complete livelihood, because they're now transplanted somewhere else with nothing.
Is there a second on that motion?
I'll second the motion.
All in favor say aye.
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 That's all I have. We'll continue to keep you updated as to when the tenants continue to move out of the trailer campers, and hopefully they will continue to work to do that. And again, I'll work with DSS to and with these families to make sure they understand.
And I'll volunteer my time, my service, if y'all need some assistance with DSS and yourself to make sure that these people get relocated in some houses and get out of those trailers.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
About three nights in my camper is all I can take. So I can't imagine what these families are having to deal with living in a camper full time. Whew. All right. So next on the agenda is the water rate discussion. Is Ricky with us? No?
Ricky was supposed to be joining, and he probably didn't realize we were going to get to that topic so soon. But
we can move on if we need to.
The next item is at 11. I'm not sure we can ask, but I'm pretty sure he's not on. We're pretty much ahead of schedule. But if you all want to, we can go ahead with some discussion about the water and then come back.
Okay. If you want to leave that discussion.
Okay, commissioners, here we go with our spreadsheet again and helping us calculate where we want to be with our water rate. So here is where we are with the current rates with the prison. We talked about, you know, this being the current rate, 5301, 66, and then 723 per 100 per 1,000 gallons. And this is the average yearly use for the prison. For Avoca, here we go with their rate of 469.40 and 479. And 475 per 1,000 gallons. And this is about what we generate, what we make from Avoca for the in the water sales. And then residential, we're currently at 1550 and then 450 per 1,000 gallons. And again, we're a little bit over 2 million for what we make from residential sales. So this is about where we are. 2.5 is about what we make. And again, as we discussed last time, we make about, it costs us about $2.7 million to run our water department. And so over here, we had our experimental rates, and I feel like the one that we were, that the board was leaning towards and strongly considering at the last meeting was the increase here for the prison of $5,400 and increasing it a dollar and some change per 1,000 gallons. That would give us an increase for the year of $62,000. For Avoca, we looked at increasing from 469.40 to 475 and taking up the rate on the 1,000 gallons to 575, increasing that $1, and that would give us an additional $24,000 in revenue. And then we also discussed increasing the residential rate a dollar on the flat rate from 1550 to 1650.
And then, that's back where it used to be at 2 years or 8 years ago.
Right. And then taking it up from 450 per 1,000 gallons to 550. And that would generate an additional 300,000, giving us an additional approximately 386,000 for the year.
Something's askew. And the reason I'm looking at this thing in an angle, so I'm trying to see the screen.
Okay.
But I believe you got $2,926,500 as your total sales.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We discussed a few weeks ago that we had $2,700,000 overhead, correct?
Correct.
And we added $70,000 on there because of the Lewiston project that could be coming up.
Okay.
So it should be $2,770,000. And if you deduct that from $2,926,500, I'm coming up with a net of $156,500.
Okay.
And you're coming up with $366,000.
That's 386, and that's because...
And I can't see it. It's a problem.
Because that's because the Lewiston project was something that we talked about doing. That's not something that we that I, from my understanding, we decided that was absolutely going to happen. The 2.7 is what it takes us to run the water department to date, as of today.
I understand, but the problem is that we know this is going to be a future project that's going to happen. If we don't plan a year out for the future, then we're going to be all messed up again.
Okay.
And your profits are in half of where we're supposed to be at. Does everybody agree with that concept?
I agree with that concept, John. You had to definitely plan in advance for a thing that you can, you know, you're going to.
Because I think William figured that the payment would be $70,000 a year, correct, William? And if we don't plan for the future as far as what's going to be bounced out next year, and I'm talking about with this new budget, then we could have another situation where you're going to be passing along another increase to the citizens, and I don't think that's fair to them.
And just so the citizens that are listening in know, we are considering this rate increase because we are, the water departments are losing money. And so we have found ourselves to, it's crucial that this take place. It's just a matter of how much. And so the Lewiston project, is it crucial for this year? Is it, is that?
Well, it'll be for 2022, and the next budget's gonna be 21-22. And from what, if I'm not misunderstanding Mr. Spivey said that it was critical that we do this Lewiston project. Finance manager, was that how you understood it?
Yeah, but I want to throw one question out, and I kind of hate to throw this out, but this money we're supposed to be getting, one of the things that they earmark it for is for infrastructure and water. So I'm kind of wondering if that money could be allocated for this particular project.
That's what, where my, where, yeah, but yeah, until we get further.
I don't have anything in writing.
That's what I'm getting ready to make. We don't know whether we can or not, so we don't plan for it.
But I just want to put that out as a topic to discuss. That's,
and again, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, so I just messaged Ricky to let him know, ask him to, you know, let him know if he could come or either join the call so that he can join in on this discussion. But the Lewiston project of the $70,000, was that how
that was payment? That was payment if we had to borrow the money from like USDA.
It was a $2 million is what he figured that it would cost to do the Lewiston project.
Okay.
And William calculated it'd be probably $70,000 a year payment.
Based on our history of being in the past.
Okay.
Assuming that rates and all were basically the same thing.
I'm talking about it needs to be in the budget.
Okay. So yeah, I mean,
you agree with that? I'm sure.
Need Ricky, yeah. If Ricky, you know, says that in his professional opinion, it needs to happen.
Yep.
And then how you understand?
Yeah, that's what I understood.
Yeah.
Because they sure at the last meeting that everything in Lewiston will fall into pieces. You know, all the lines and stuff were being
meters, everything.
Meters, everything had to be replaced, man, at some point, because right now we're patching up, you know.
And we got water mains breaking. I meant maintenance is $70,000 just payment on the 2 million. Oh hell yeah!
Oh yeah, yeah. You definitely spend $70,000 and the patch on easily, probably, you know, versus replacing.
Commissioner,
then you got to worry about going back.
That's kind of what they came out of here. The ones that we had earlier.
So in order to put that $70,000 in the equation, what then do we need to do? Mr. Moneyman? Commissioner Trent?
Well, I'm sitting here looking at the numbers right now, and again, I'm got my head cocked here to see this. We've got $2,926,500 in total sales. And we're working on a budget without the $70,000 of $2,700,000. Is that correct, Mr. Manager?
Say that again.
Okay, I'm sorry. We've got a total sales of $2,926,500.
Right.
Yes.
We are working with a budget that you have up there of $2,700,000, which does not include the 70. I'm coming up with a profit of 226,500, not 386,000.
Mm-hmm. And is that sufficient?
Well, my question is, why is there a difference of the numbers that are up there versus the numbers on here?
And again, that's because the 70,000 that you keep mentioning for Lewiston is not included in this. This is as of today. So if we
right, include, but I'm taking your numbers that you have right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but he hasn't included.
I haven't included on this time. Okay.
So okay. So what?
So if I take 2,926,500 minus 2,700,000, I'm coming up with
that
200. That red 386 you got is coming up 226,500.
So. To answer your question, this 386 is this number, what we will make under the proposed rate, this number minus what we're currently making. So this would give us...
Which does not include the 70,000 for the loan payment.
Well, no, I didn't include that in.
But what
so
I'm
what
saying
he's doing, his number's going to have to make up for some of the loss you're experiencing back here where we're not making it up. He's looking at the difference between what we're making versus what he's proposing to make.
Correct. Right.
Nah, since we got a shortfall,
are you using 2,500,000 now?
Yes.
Yes. What you're using is the 2,700,000.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. But the actual number, if it cost us $2,700,000 to run a department, okay, from 2,926,500, is only going to be a gross of $226,500.
Correct.
I mean, we got to use what our current number is going to be. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Is this the number you're coming up with? You can't see that.
Can you read it to him?
It's off of 226,500.
That's what I'm coming up with.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. So that's what we would
right
pretty much profit for the year since it takes us 2.7.
Figuring the 2,900,000 versus the 2.7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's 226,000.
Right.
Yes, sir.
500. Right.
Exactly. And that's without the 70,000 in there.
Correct. So the question is, I mean, that would definitely be a whole lot better than what we've been doing and what we're doing right now to come out $150,000. Dollar, you know, profit, that would be better. I mean, of course, you know, we may want to make more than that. But
let me ask you a question real quick.
Yes, sir.
When we did our reevaluations, what was it, about 8 years ago? 6 years ago?
Reval, that was what?
I'm talking about on the water. We're dealing with water right now.
Okay? Oh, yeah. I don't remember when that was.
Okay. We need to get that information and find out what our profits were at that time with the new rates that we put in place at that time.
Well, also keep in mind that after another year, his departmental supplies should start diminishing because he's not replacing meters. He should be about finished with meters. So after he gets out of this one more year,
that should be. I understand that. And the reason I'm saying is the comparison rate as far as.
Oh, no, I'm just talking about the amount you're looking at here.
No. What I'm talking about when Green Engineering came in the very last time and said we had to get our rates up, okay, because we were still in the same catch 22, okay? We need to see when they put the increases on what our gross profits were, okay? Find out what they were and see what the percentage was versus sales. Because as I understand it, if you make too much money, you also will not qualify for federal grants.
I don't think there's a cap on like the LGC, but what he's talking about is something different.
Right.
You could be eligible for assistance.
Exactly.
Right.
So you see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if we can just get that information by email,
okay,
then we can make a decision as far as what we need to do here.
Yes, John, you got a point, man, because we don't want to overprice where we don't. We won't qualify for grant money from the federal government, because grant money saves the taxpayers.
That's exactly right, and that's what it's set up for. So my thing is, if we're netting, like I said last time, close to 13%, okay, off that number, okay, after we added the 70,000 in there, I think it dropped it down to, I think it was 11%, but let's just say 13%. We turn around and do that, and we figure what that percentage was when Green did it prior to that, okay?
Okay.
And we did the recommended increases.
Okay.
What was that percentage versus the amount of sales that we had, so that we know we're matching or being at least close to it, and that way there we should be within the standard we need to have.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I think if you get us that information by email, and I think we can make a decision at that point in time, even if we have a special call, Madam Chair, to do this. It wouldn't take a matter of...
Right. Well, we'll be meeting again on the 26th. So.
That's quick enough, too.
Yeah, that's quick enough.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I can have this... and again, while they're doing this, I'm going to... If it's okay, I'm going to have some discussions with county manager and finance officer and reference those percentages while we get this done. Okay. You understand what I'm talking about, right, William?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good point. We want to get to the stage where we can qualify for loans.
I wouldn't want to make copies of anything.
Because we're ahead of schedule, we're going to go to the bottom of the agenda to other items as needed. This past week, I believe it was, I inquired about the use of the multi-purpose room at the Extension Library Building. The county manager has provided the policy for the use of the room that we sit in today, the senior citizen, as a guide for us. And he's going to lead this discussion, and he has another item for us today. So.
Okay. Commissioners, in the right-hand side of your packet, the last handout is the Bertie County Senior Center use policies. And I'm just bringing this to your attention to show you how we currently use this facility or allow the public to use this facility. And you may want to model that community space, community room in the new facility in a similar manner. Or you may just, you know, feel like this needs to be updated as well. But just taking a look at it, you can see it says the senior center was developed for the use of Bertie County senior citizens. The senior center gym can be used by the following organizations after arrangements have been made with the Council on Aging director. Of course, they say senior citizens, no charge, government agencies, no charge, state agencies, no charge, county and state educational institutions, no charge, but nonprofit organizations and businesses may rent or use a senior center for $100 per day.
All right, so I asked Ms. Thompson, which is our senior citizen director, to send me by email our policy.
Okay.
And so I believe the one that you have here is has been revised. It was revised probably a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And so the part that I'm seeing that even brought it to my attention is on the revised one says nonprofit organizations and businesses may rent the senior citizen center for $200 a day plus a $50 incidental fee.
We need to update the website. This came straight from the website.
Okay, so okay. The incidental fee is refundable, and she explained when they, and the board probably would remember that we had an incident a while back when the painter was in the building. And so gotcha. She was directed at that time to increase 200. The rental.
Okay. So that's $200 per day and then $50 incident.
Right.
Okay. All right. If you notice, it does limit it. It says family reunions, class reunions, parties, dances, weddings, wedding receptions, sorority and fraternity parties are not allowed. Alcoholic beverages are not allowed and are strictly prohibited.
Are you still having dances there?
Not at this time. We had them before COVID, yes. And the dances, the senior citizen dances, but not dances that for the public.
Okay, are the senior citizen dances still going to be allowed?
Eventually, not right now during COVID.
I understand because of COVID. But I'm right. We're not believing that.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So that pretty much gives you an overview of the do's and don'ts according to the policy. And thank you for that update, Shirley. Now, the next one is the agreement. And let me know if there you all note any changes here. But the agreement for use of the senior center gym is just something that we get the person who's renting it to sign and agree to. Right, yeah, we definitely find out what the occupancy is in the new facility.
It should be more. That's a big room.
Yeah.
At the new building.
Is this the room? I mean, where's this other room going to be at again?
It's at the cooperative extension and library facility.
That multi-purpose room.
Right.
We got the extra $1 million for.
Yeah, I remember. Heck, they got 370 for just here.
Great.
Mitch or Chris would be the fire code guy to be able to determine that.
Oh, yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. We will get what that capacity is.
I certainly think the user fee could be more at the new building, considering it'll have a kitchen area. And like this, I mean.
Let me ask you a question. Isn't that the kitchen area itself, cook stoves, gas, and all that kind of stuff, to allow people to go into the cook area to use those utensils, I would say it would be off limits.
Yeah, I mean, that's because up for you all. Well,
it has another little side kitchen, not the industrial kitchen that we put in place for extension. It has another.
But what if they start a fire? I mean, I don't think they should be allowed to cook in the building at all. If they want to have a barbecue, they can cater it or whatever. But cooking in the building is putting our building at a risk. And now we're running into an issue. I understand we're insured by the pool, okay? Mm-hmm. But how's that risk work when we're charging for something and now they're coming in and somebody's cooking in a kitchen that we have set up for
something to think about.
Teaching, okay, absolutely. Which is through 4-H and things of that nature, and all of a sudden there's a fire and they burn it up, and where are we at there? I would be against that.
Well, that's a good point, and you know, even if you're not cooking, just the fact that you're renting it may affect our insurance. That's something we probably need to check into, see if it's even worth it.
I mean, I would hate to, quite frankly, I mean, that is... It, from my understanding, for that $1 million was utilized because we had the center that was on Queen Street, the community center on Queen Street, square footage there, which was left out when the state itemized what we were going to be able to get and allowed us another $1 million to utilize that space because that flooded also to go over there. As a meeting conference area, not for all these other things, for dances and all this.
Well, I agree.
So I don't know why we're changing and going over there.
Well, I mean, we're not. Here. We're just looking. I mean, we're. This is well, time to talk it out.
No, I know. But my point of contention is this: we're opening our liability that much more wider. Okay. They're already in here doing what they've been doing for the past. That's a brand new building over there. We set it up for conference meetings and things of that nature. And
I would suggest, and this is a suggestion, y'all think, we're not even in the building yet. I don't even know what it looks like yet. Maybe not rent this for the first year and maybe revisit this in a year after we've been open for a year.
How about using, like, for business? The extension is going to be using it a lot for their meetings and that kind of thing.
And I think that's what the intentions of it was for, anyhow, for conferences and things like that. And if we leave it at that.
I think it was really designed for a clean conference meeting, a business meeting from different agencies to use.
I'm anxious to have our associational meeting in there. So.
Yeah, well, the cook, man.
But yeah, we want to keep cook it nice.
Yeah, I would say that,
too much liability.
That's just for conference meetings only. I mean, not for banquets or anything like that.
We can certainly follow those guidelines for this first year.
Yeah, at least for the first year.
The pleasure of the board.
Okay.
Yeah, let's
put it. You need to vote on that, Mr. Manager?
Consensus is enough for me.
Consensus. Okay, consensus. You got it. Consensus just for conferences.
Absolutely.
At this point in time.
Business type meetings.
Right.
Yeah.
Does the we need to write up some type of criteria so we'll have something in writing? That's something that you need to do, Mr. County Manager, you think? Write up some type of criteria of who qualifies and who does not, so we'll have something in writing.
Yes, sir, that's an excellent point. And since we're talking about it now, on this current Burchett County Senior Center use policy, it actually states at the top, if you'll see where those entities we don't charge, can we leave it at Burchett County? First of all, Burchett County government agencies. If somebody within our local government needs to use it, of course, that's permissible, right? And then next would be state agencies. And then we have county and state educational
institutions. The batteries are dead.
So again, that was Burchett County government agencies, number one. Someone within local government, county government needs to use it, of course, it'll be available for that, right?
Right.
Next, if we have a state agency who wants to use it, we're saying that is permissible.
Right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. And then county and state educational institutions, we're saying that is okay as well.
Yes.
Right? And then from my understanding, that's where it would stop. We're not saying nonprofits.
For the first year.
So
how about a hospital? What do y'all think?
You said
what do y'all think about the hospital? They're kind of across the street from them, and I could
still
see
a conference meeting.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Of course, the library, and then you're saying healthcare.
Yeah, healthcare, hospital.
The hospital.
Right.
I would say so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any type of business.
Well, I don't know if you want to get any type of business now. Type of business, then you're looking at any type of business.
Right. Gotcha. Right. I'm with you.
Right. So again, I have those.
He's open Pandora's box. Yeah.
Okay. So again, we have Burchett County government agencies, state agencies, county and state educational institutions, and then the healthcare entities such as Biden Hospital, et cetera.
You could probably also put it at the very bottom of that. If anybody else applies for it, it can come before the county commissioner review.
Yes, right. Sir. Yes,
okay.
Yes, sir.
And then
And that's a good point, because I'm sure there's things that we haven't thought of.
Of course. Right. That will come up. Of course. For sure. Something comes up that we haven't discussed, I'll be sure to bring it back.
Of course.
The no smoking, no alcohol, all those things, because it is county property.
For sure. For sure.
No weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Okay. The other item I would like to bring before the board is our next regular scheduled meeting is for April 26th at 6 o'clock, of course, in the commissioner's room. And for some reason, I'm sure there was a good reason that we did this, but I'm not remembering what that good reason is. But after that, our next regular meeting is on May 3rd, which is 1 week later. And it would be great if we could add another week in there instead of having two meetings a week apart. If we could cancel or amend the schedule so that we don't have the May 3rd meeting, but create the regular meeting for May on May 10th at 6 o'clock in the commission's room, if your schedules permit, that would be great.
It works great for me. Yeah. All right.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Yes, I'm going to need. We're actually amending the schedule, so I will need a.
So I'll take a motion to amend the schedule from May 3rd to May the 10th.
Ow.
I can't hear you.
Wow.
I second that motion.
Thank you,
motion,
sir.
I'm sorry.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, that is all I have as of right now for other items as needed.
Okay. We have been joined by Mr. Ricky Spivey, our water district supervisor, and I believe we have finished that discussion, so we really appreciate you joining us. We have asked the county manager and Mr. William to give us the amount of the percentage of increase after the last water increase. When was that done? 8 years ago?
Actually, 2016 was the last time we actually did the increase as far as water rates.
And with that rate versus the amount of sales, what was that percentage? Do you know what it is?
I can't remember what the percentage was.
We need to make sure of that before we enact anything, like that last set of numbers we have.
13% with the increase, correct?
It was, but what I'm going to do is make sure our percentages are not too high, because then we wouldn't be qualified for some federal grants and things of that nature.
With the recommendation that we have here showing a 13% increase versus the last time?
Yeah, in other words, what was our percentage of increase last time versus our percentage of increase this time with plan three, okay?
Right.
So we can see that they're comparable, mm-hmm. and that way we know that we're within.
We don't want to price ourselves out of grant opportunities.
Right. That's for us. We don't have the data from that last increase.
Not with me.
Right. Okay. We'll get that certain piece and take a look at so that you actually go. So we are at this point where we move forward with the recommendation of the rate increase.
Say it one more time, I'm sorry.
We have not.
No, we're not going to move forward with it just yet. They want to know exactly what the, you know, what the numbers were.
But April 26th, we are. I already spoke to the board, asked Madam Chair if it's okay if I meet with you guys so we can get this thing nailed down, if that's okay.
Okay.
Within the next few days.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and put it down and get that percentage.
We do need to understand. I mean, we do understand that we need to move forward. We're just making sure that we price ourselves out of grants.
We don't want to overprice ourselves where that we won't qualify for other grants.
Right.
That's all.
All right. But thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I know you all are working hard, and we really, really do appreciate it. And not just for my department, but I think our department would really appreciate everything that you, Commissioner, are actually doing to continue to move the county forward. And we're so thankful and grateful for Mr. Warren Bone to come here with all the wealth of knowledge to help out as well.
Yes. Yeah, we appreciate that.
Okay. I got one question, if you may, if I can it's not rough to my budget. It's in reference to the Hurricane Murphy Bout program. And I know I heard bits and pieces, but where are we right now with the bout of my property out there on 13 that wasn't actually included in the last bout? Do anyone have any information on that?
I have.
Go ahead.
I spoke with Mr. Hibbert, Chris Hibbert, maybe a month ago. And you want the short version or you want long version?
Well, the short version work if it's...
Short version, he says that you're sitting on a gold mine.
Wow. How soon will we look for that gold mine?
Well, you know, fellow government, it takes a minute, man.
I got it.
It's taking 5 years to get most of it.
Took me 5 years to get paid. Right. You know, from downtown.
September, if I'm not mistaken, September this year will be 5 years actually since that.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, in other words, looking at another 5 years before they actually complete.
No.
All right, so
that's what I want to know for sure.
Gentlemen, I got a text message from him yesterday. I had sent him a text message about somebody else's property. And he says he's still working on drawing down the money. It's been a slow process. I said, any idea how much longer? He said, I need to talk with Alan and see his cash flow. We're trying to get all money back before the fiscal year ends.
Right. Okay.
And so that's July. June.
Right. Okay. And
you know, because I saw a notice, public notice in the paper.
Right. That's one of the steps towards the final process. Okay. It's to advertise. Ain't nobody going to petition anything against that.
You know. But there was two actually added. I think it says something about one horn and brother.
Elevation and replacement. Right.
That's what I need to know. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
We're anxious for all our landowners to get the money that they deserve.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, we're working on it.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Okay. Thank you for coming.
Hey, Ricky.
How you doing?
All right. So, I guess we're still ahead of schedule, which is a great problem to have.
Right.
So if you don't mind, we can talk about the fire department's budget and the fire study and what's next. So if you want to lead this discussion, County Manager.
Yes, ma'am. So, Commissioners, I handed you a packet of budgets from fire departments. There we have 12 departments in the county, and you have 12 budgets. And when I say budgets, I'm referring to our request of the fire departments, which was to provide 3 years history of revenues and expenditures. And so I've received that, or most of that, some of that from 10 fire departments. And the ones that we have to follow up with, the ones that I don't have with me today are Allander and Askewville. However, everyone else, and they're in alphabetical order, starting with Blue Jay, ending with Windsor, this is the information that we have that has been submitted to honor that request. And so I can give you a few minutes if you want to take a look.
Have the two that have not submitted budgets given a reason?
No, they have not. And we're in the process of contacting them. I can't say that they don't have the intentions of submitting anything. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that we have reached out, and I have not gotten confirmation if they sent it and we just didn't get it, or if they're just not planning to send it. But as soon as I get an update from them, I will let you know.
So I know, like Colerain 2020, their yearly balance is down significantly, but you know, our fire departments in 2020 were not didn't have the opportunity to do their usual fundraising.
Right.
So it's hard to base it on.
Well, but I look at 18 and 19, they were plus 10,000.
Right.
And 19, they were plus 5,600. And if you look at the Blue Jay 2020, looks like to me they were plus 16,000 and 2018 plus 22, which is, and 2019 plus 13.
And I know the fundraisers for these fire departments are a lot of work. But I also know that it brings community together, which is, you can't put a price tag on that. But you know, we appreciate everything that they do for our county.
And if you look at Kelford, they had a plus of $2,800 in 18. In the hole in 2019, 5118, and plus in 2020 of 2891, which of course made up that loss they had in 2019 for basically a break even.
Can you remind us again what their ask is for this budget year? Sorry to put you on the spot. I know it was $500 a call, but I don't remember the.
Let's see.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Pilesville did have a fundraiser a month ago.
Yeah, a month ago. Yeah, about a month ago.
The barbecue was really, really good.
Okay, so the request that we received from the Bertie County Fire Association was increasing the current budget. We give each department $30,000 right now, and they're requesting $50,000 and an additional of $500 per call.
Who's paying the calls now? Us?
Nobody.
No, right, nobody. We just give them that flat.
That's
30.
Just a new request thing, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And on that work paperwork that we had, it showed how many calls they've been having.
For instance, let's see.
Have we decided that they were taking these requests from the fire association and not necessarily from the individual departments? And the reason I ask that is because a lot of times individual departments may not agree with the association.
Supposedly, it was 100% the ones that were present that night, and I think they were all but one department that was present, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm.
Is that from my understanding, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. And they were all in agreement.
So we have, as a county, we're dealing with the association, is that correct? With the fire association?
Yes, but by all means, if you want to, you know, open it up to the, you know, for the, if you want to hear from them.
I'm asking. I don't know. I just know sometimes there is a disconnect between the fire association
and
some of the individual fire
and I've heard that as well. Yeah. Although, again, this request came from the fire association. From my understanding, majority were
Do you
involved.
Know not all these are members of the association?
I'm sorry.
All 12 are.
All 12 are? Yeah. Okay.
And I think they've been working really hard on that relationship and getting them all.
I think so too.
On one accord.
I'm not sure they've accomplished that yet. And maybe they have. I don't know.
And I asked about their ask, the $50,000 and $500, and they did say it was an ask. They understand our budget process and they understand that they probably won't get the full ask.
Do we know how many total calls there were last year?
Total calls. Let's see. Total calls. Yes, I can give that for you in just a second. Based on information received from the Fire Association last year, calendar year 2020, there was a total of 638 calls.
So many of our fire departments have a money in the bank. But the price of equipment, it won't take long for them to go through that money.
When's the last time we gave them an increase? I think it was at least
3 years ago.
3 years ago. And that was what, a 12,000?
No, 10,000.
10,000?
We went from 20,000 to 30,000.
Okay.
Each.
Per fire department, correct?
I remember, but I made the recommendation.
Yeah, I remember seconding it. What's total expense we give fire departments now? $360,000 total?
Yes, sir.
So asking for a total of 50?
Yes, sir.
And that's including the 30, right? So it'd be a total of 240 extra, correct?
That's correct.
Well, that's 50 total.
50 total. Well, should be asking for another 240, correct?
Well, they're not asking for 50 total. They're asking for 50. And then they're asking for an additional 500 per call. Right. But if you just want to compare to 50 to 30.
I'm just breaking that down.
Yes,
making
sir.
Sure my three, making sure our 360,000 mm-hmm. is included, which comes up to, you know,
yes,
an additional 240,000.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. The 50 they're asking for is 30 already.
Given.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Given.
Yes, sir.
Right.
So that would be an increase
so
of 20,000.
An increase 20,000. Exactly.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
When do you need a decision on this?
Well,
for this budget year.
So they're asking for roughly additional 440,000.
Yeah.
Maybe give them 50 and no calls. John, can we give them 50 and no calls? No.
When will you be inserting those figures?
That's probably better.
She said, when will you be inserting those figures? Since it's April, sometimes within the next.
Near the end of the month,
couple weeks. But of course, I'll provide my recommendation to you all, and of course, you can know change that. But and
all right, so county manager was saying in the next couple of weeks, they're going to be getting the budget together for the next fiscal year. He will be making his recommendations. And then during our time in our budget sessions, then we can either go with that recommendation or do something different. So if you'd like to have some conversation with the county manager on your thoughts, personally, I think $500 a call is way too high. That's just my personal opinion. And I have voiced that to the associational president. But like, he said it was an ask. So that's just my opinion.
Probably every time they crank that truck up.
No, he was basing it on wear and tear on the engine, gas.
638. Yeah, $500,000.
I was asked by an individual if they were going to start paying firemen to attend, because then that puts them in a whole different category. And I was told no, that some departments at the end of the year may give their firemen a little something, but it's not based on call volume. Through the Mr. Causey's office, the insurance office, that they can't pay because we don't have paid firemen except one in the county. So I do appreciate the departments that have given us their budget and you know, look them over. We can have some more discussion around this either at our next meeting if you want. Or we can have discussion at budget time after the county manager.
I think budget time is the best time to do it because we don't know what we're working with until we get to the budget in the first place.
Right.
So there's no use in having a discussion until we get to that.
Something we all agree the fire departments are a priority and we want to give them what
of course.
We can. We just don't know what we can.
Right.
Right.
Of course.
And something else I would like to bring to your attention again, which the fire study talked about a little bit. I just want to make sure that you all are aware and considering that. Of course, right now we use the general fund appropriation where we just give them the flat 30,000. However, the fire study does mention the options of one, establishing rural fire protection districts. And then the second option is establishing a single county fire and rescue service district. Now, if we are interested in going in either of those ways, or if you just want to learn more about them, we can have the people who did the study to follow up and delve into that if that is something that you all are interested in doing, or if you just prefer to give that.
That sounds like a whole day of sitting and hashing it all out.
Right. Right. So if you all are interested in exploring those options, we can set up a work session and have them to come and talk to us about those options and what it
probably needs to be done.
I agree. It probably needs to be done.
Okay.
I don't know that we have time.
Right. We may not be able
for
to.
For this year.
Correct. But it is something that.
But if we start planning early in the next fiscal year, then
yes,
we'll have time to do it.
Yes.
Okay. We have 15 minutes before the home consortium program presentation. So you have time, is that the time for audit, the audit issue? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I got.
So I was hoping that the auditors would be with us today, but I was told that the audit is not 100% ready yet. I was so anxious to see this gentleman today and to, I don't know if he's listening in or not, but hoping to tell them to make sure that they appear in 14 County in August so that our audit is on time for next year, because this makes 2 years in a row that we've been behind schedule, and I'm not really comfortable with that. I don't believe the rest of you are either. So hopefully he's listening in, but yeah.
Yes. So after our last work session and discussion and talking about wanting to know where we are with this audit, we reached out to the auditor and he said he would have us something within 2 weeks in time for this work session. And he sent us a draft, a very rough draft yesterday around 6 o'clock. And so William and I have gone through it as quickly as we could within, you know, since we've had our hands on it. And our initial thoughts are we definitely need to follow up with him. There are some things that we need to bring to his attention. It's a very rough draft, not something that is final or complete. The one thing that we do want to talk about today or bring to your attention is William, when he talked about his crystal ball or his prediction on how we thought we ended 2020, he gave that figure of $500,000, saying that we were going to be about that much short. And it wasn't based on what we see here and pretty much feel pretty comfortable with. It was just his prediction was a little bit short. We actually looks like we're about 750 short. Okay.
I do want to follow up on this because I think they've taken some of my AR for EMS. I think they've taken a little bit more than what I had planned on. So I need to find out where they got their number from versus what I thought it should be. So that could possibly come down a little bit, but I need to follow up with them on that.
And something else, when you think about that figure, also consider too, it's showing that our final budget, we had a fund balance appropriation of $1.9 million. And William and I have been looking at the budgets and, you know, past budgets and just taking a look at a trend when we talk to the, you know, our auditors and accountant and all that stuff. And we've really found, and you all are probably aware, but it's really something that we really, really have to digest and consider. For the past few years, and I think you all know, I talked about it in my budget message, we have appropriated quite a bit of fund balance just to balance the budget. And the figure that William and I, that we both agree on, is it's been about 1.2 million. Again, and that's just not for a big one-time special project, but just to balance the budget. And there's no way that, you know, we can continue to do that without depleting the fund balance. You want to, No. I'm not talking about this year. Okay. I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about in prior years. Okay. We had a trend. It was 1.2 again, and that was just simply to balance the budget. And so, and I know there's some things that we want to do. First of all, the American Rescue Plan looks like that is going to be a great resource. Of course, we're eager to hear what we can do with that. That will present some opportunities. I know there are some things that we want to do in terms of, you know, COLAs, cost of living adjustments, and things like that. I just think we just really have to acknowledge that we, anytime that we increase our expenses, we have to either also balance that out with identifying another source of revenue, unless we're gonna, you know, knock our expenses down by that same amount. Because again, just taking it from fund balance, that's not gonna sustain you know, our financial position and us financially. So that's just something for us to consider.
In those 3 years you're talking about too, how many major disasters do we have?
We had some, and
I know of three.
Yeah,
and I also know that we were sitting out there $1.3 million from the federal government. We hadn't ever gotten back yet.
Absolutely,
that we were pulling out of fund balance due to the fact we had to.
Absolutely,
and that was $1.3 million. It's very coincidental that your number is 1.2, and how those two numbers correlate fairly close together. Yeah. And so we're finally getting our money back now.
Correct.
Okay. And mm-hmm. just the last year mm-hmm. that we're getting our money back.
Yes, sir. So there's no denying that we had good reasons to use some fund balance. Stop. Please don't understand. I'm not saying that we were just frivolous. However, we did not, it wasn't a total of 1.2. So we used more than 1.2 in those years. I'm saying we used 1.2 just to balance the budget.
I get it.
And if you go for
we also had some projects that we didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mm-hmm. courthouse was one of them.
You had a building that was falling down.
Part of that courthouse renovation, we didn't have a choice. We had to do it. There were some other items, you know, that was nice to have, and we did those while we were in the process. But some of that money had to be spent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
From the lack of previous boards not spending.
Absolutely.
The jail was another area.
Almost a half a million.
Yeah, we made some excellent improvements that were very needed. No doubt about it.
Had to be your purpose. Mm-hmm. Had to be. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Reed? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and also considering the fact that if you go back several years, there was an increase in salaries for the Sheriff's Department, and there was an increase in manpower and all that. All these increases came without an increase in tax rates or increase in revenue. So all that kind of compounds to the problem we experience. And it's just a multitude of things that come all in at one time.
And plus with the emergency situations we've had.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying it's
all
a bunch
together,
of things.
Absolutely. Because how do you sit there and plan? You can't plan for natural disasters. And they happen along with what your expenditures are, and that's where you get where you're at.
But I will go on record as saying, based on our attempt to do a budget this year with no fund balance, if our trend holds true, we should definitely look a lot better at the end of 21 than we've looked in the last several years. We're turning it around.
And we've stopped the spending. I'm very grateful to our county manager. He understands that it doesn't grow on trees, and he holds us to that also. So we just need to continue and get that fund balance built back up for the next couple of years at least. So, any employees listening or other agencies that think this might be the year to come get you some money, it probably is not, because we do need to work on getting the fund balance built back up.
Well, since you mentioned that, Madam Chairperson, employees tell me they have a raise in like 2 years.
They didn't get one last year. It was the first year they hadn't had one.
I will hope that at some point we can do something for them. Something, because I wear their shoes years ago, and I'm a hard worker, but I couldn't get an increase in pay. I had to go work with John Trent.
I agree. But we also can't have the LGC and others from Raleigh looking at us because our fund balance.
Right, I understand.
Because we're not being fiscally responsible.
Right, I understand that.
And unfortunately, because we have been using our fund balance in the previous years, this board now, our current board, is going to have to make some tough decisions. And hopefully some money will start coming in that is owed to us. And if we can use, depending on how we can use this rescue money, that might be a saving grace for us.
That's right. I hope so.
But when I asked the association how long it would be before we knew about the rescue funds, they said, probably Christmas. So,
really?
Yeah.
Well, didn't the statute say they're supposed to send it like 60 days? They said that they were going to send half of it within 60 days, and that was about almost a month ago.
Yes.
So in 30 days, we could be receiving half of it.
You know,
but we don't know how
listen,
we can spend
in,
it.
Right.
In 2018, we were interviewed over at the 900, the school building, 900 building, and I forget who was chairman. It was 19, maybe. We were interviewed because it was resiliency, and it was about people getting their houses lifted and this, that, and the other. The news reporters were there, and I happened to come in late, and they said, "You're the only one we haven't spoke to," and they spoke to me, and I said, and my statement to them was, the money is supposedly, the feds have given it to the state. The state says they've never gotten it. Nobody knows where the money's at. I said, it'd be 5 years before we receive this money. It's unfair for the people of Burtee County. Mm-hmm. Guess how long it's been since we started getting, before we have been getting reimbursed, is 5 years. is 5 years.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. representatives from Burr and Tillis's office was sitting in there, and they said, no, it won't be 5 years.
Well, guess what? How many years was it? 5 years.
I mean, there's been some money before then, but yeah, the bulk of it.
50,000 here, 25,000 there.
Yeah. And we're on the lookout for a check this week.
If it's not here by Friday, I'm going to make another phone call. So, yeah, I've got it on my calendar to make a phone call. So, yeah.
We'll let you know.
Yeah, I don't want to have to make that phone call.
So, so as we will definitely, we're going to get back with the auditor ASAP and talk about a few things that we notice. And as soon as we get a better draft, we will
have a discussion then.
Yes.
I can look at you and tell you don't want to discuss right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
Okay. So please deliver a message to him. And I think I can say it with the full board. Okay,
yes.
That they're going to join me in this message that we want them in Berkeley County in August preparing our next year's audit.
Yes, ma'am.
And if they can't do that, they'll let us know now so we can go looking elsewhere for another audit.
Yes, and I have also made it clear that the board and I will like to see a final audit before, which like ASAP, because
yes.
we need to, in order to plan effectively, appropriately for the upcoming year, we need to know how we ended the previous year, which is, 2020. So we'll get back with them.
You did a budget last year without that information, and I'm sure.
Prefer not to do it again.
Yes, I'm sure you would love to have that information. And we would love for you to have that information. So, anything else on that topic? No? Okay, so we're at the 11 o'clock hour, so let's see, Mr. Flood, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Mr. Flood is joining us from the Home Consortium Program. He's the director of the local community affairs. So I've been anxious to hear your presentation, and I had lots of questions when me and the county manager were talking about it. So,
very good. Well, thank you, and thank you for giving me some time with you today. I will say, just as a quick background, I will be brief, but I've been listening maybe for the past half hour to your conversations, and it reminded me of my time in local government and having to make difficult decisions and go through all of that. As mentioned, I am with East Carolina University. I've been with ECU now for 3 years. Prior to that, I was with the city of Greenville for 29 years, where I was a planner director and assistant city manager. So all of these conversations that you're having, they bring back a lot of memories. I'll say that. So you have a tough job, and I applaud you for doing the work for your community to serve them and serve in those capacities. The reason I'm here with you today, the State Employees Credit Union, their foundation, asked East Carolina University to help with the challenge of affordable housing in Northeast North Carolina. Their members and contributors to the foundation said, we really would like to see our funds go to help strengthen affordable housing in Northeast North Carolina. We began with your manager a process back, I believe it was probably in November, of meeting with members of Bertie, Halifax, Hertford, Northampton, and Martin counties to discuss how could we in this five county region increase the availability and funding for affordable housing. The State Employees Credit Union being the financial backer for this effort has a vested interest in this. And so they charged East Carolina University to work with that. It's no big surprise that we picked the five county region because of the work that you all have done. And I think some of the projects that we have in the area, but also you have a nonprofit called CADA that we have frequent conversations with on how we can help strengthen affordable housing in the area. So everything really came together. So during the course of the conversations, I identified a program that I worked with in 1997 in Greenville to create a home consortium that really guaranteed funding for Greenville and seven other communities within the area continuously that decided to participate in a home consortium. And so that's a little bit about what I wanted to talk about. Going back, I'll just give a quick story. In 1994, we were not an entitlement community, meaning we were just like you are now. We'd have to apply for funding and hope to get funding. We became an entitlement, and then this idea of a home consortium was released. Actually, it was released in 1992. We signed up and created one in 1997, and it changed the avenue of housing in our community. We were losing people to other communities that needed to have housing that they could afford. You would say Greenville really was not a problem. It really was. We had a task force that was designed to find ways to create affordable housing, because these are the workers in a variety of industries, whether it's a firefighter, a policeman, nurse, someone that works in a retail outlet or whatever. These are the people in our community that we wanted to hold on to, and we were losing them. They were moving outside of our community elsewhere because they didn't have any options for affordable housing. The waiting list that we had for people that needed their homes fixed grew to about 300 people. And so we were really kind of chasing whatever we could find. And so the Home Consortium was one of the tools that we used. And so I want to give a brief presentation on the Home Consortium, how it might change and affect or provide some housing for you in your community. This will be very brief, but I want to walk through just a presentation that I've shared with your manager and shared with five managers that in the counties mentioned that will give you some idea about the program, and I'll open it up really quickly for questions. It says the host has disabled screen sharing, so I'll need to get permission to show the PowerPoint unless you all can show it for me.
Ms. Cartwright?
Yes, working on it now.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Maybe while we're waiting on that, has anyone had any familiarity or working with the home program before in your community?
Not I.
Okay, I think I can share it now. I'll be brief and I'll walk you through this. This is a presentation that we've shared so far with the Rural Advisory Commission members. You have a member on that committee that's working on this process with us. And this is a presentation that I've shared with them. So this is an example of just a few questions that I've asked everyone. How much does your community receive in housing grant funding now? And would an annual award of housing funds begin to address some of the housing needs in your community? And so we went through these questions, and everybody so far has said, we really don't have anything of any consistency, and we really do need some level of funding to help us through our needs in our various counties and communities. So there are many successful affordable housing programs and initiatives. They all become extremely more successful when we go through these steps. We have competent and knowledgeable staff to implement the programs. We don't have undue political influence, and then we have consistency in funding. And that's the real key. We have consistency in funding. My guess is you probably put together applications, you await funding, and you're told you're kind of close, but you're not quite there. In 1992, a program was created by the federal government called the HOME Program. It was a result of the Cranston-Gonzalez Affordable Housing Act. It provides an additional layer of funding for developing housing for low to moderate income families. It's now becoming common to hear this called workforce housing, because we want to support the workers that are in our communities with decent, safe, and affordable housing. Under the HOME Program, there is a category of a non-urban county area that can link together, that's linked geography, that can sign a cooperative agreement, and they can receive funding on a continuous basis for home funds. And those funds can be used to renovate homes in your communities, partner with developers to build affordable housing in your communities, and really strengthen your economic development activity. I tell everyone that I talk to, economic development, now when you're trying to lure industry, you've got to have suitable, decent housing for the people that you want to work in those areas. And hopefully you want to preserve some of the young talent that you've got in your community, and that it doesn't siphon off to places like Greenville and other places because you don't have the necessary housing to keep them there.
Can I ask you a question before we move on to that, please?
Sure.
In that program, the home program, does that provide financing for developers to build these homes?
It can. Now, I'll tell you, in affordable housing, you typically don't have one source of financing. I'll show you two examples of what I did in Greenville with this money, but you may have layered financing, such as NC Housing Tax Credits. You may have federal funds. You may have funds like this. This can be used to help finance the development of affordable housing in your community. Yes.
Okay. And who would we discuss this with? Who's a person of contact that we could discuss this with in depth?
Well, we're getting the process started for you, and I'm going to walk you through the process. Tomorrow, our RAC members will meet again. We actually have the Housing and Urban Development Greensboro office staff members will be present to further answer questions for you. But I'm going to walk you through what needs to happen and give you just a snapshot of what happens and how to get there.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions before I move on? And I will pick up the pace, I promise. So home consortia are formed and they are determined eligible for funding based upon HUD formula. And that eligibility is based upon several factors such as population, amount of poverty, per capita income, et cetera. There are a variety of things that are used to determine that formula allocation. Under this category, the statutory level of funding for new consortia is $750,000. Now that's an important point. The formula determines what an area is eligible for. We've already preliminarily run the numbers for the 5-county region that I've talked about, and the 5-county region is eligible for $657,000 annually. And that would come every year to the consortium and be divided as the 5-county region considers best for a particular program year. The first year, though, you have to earn 750. So what HUD does is they'll say, if you are close, you have to make up that difference only in the first year. So for the 5-county region, there's a difference of about $90,000 in the first year that the 5 counties, if you decided to pursue this, you would have to come up with $90,000 in the first year only, and you would get this money continuously as long as the program is in effect. So you would get $657,000 annually with a $90,000 investment the first year with HUD. Okay. So this is the amount that's been determined through the Home Builder Program that Bertie, Martin, Halifax, Northampton counties are eligible for. You're eligible for $657,000 annually.
Okay, question.
Yes.
Is that per county together?
That is together.
Okay, what happens is a county doesn't participate?
If a county doesn't participate, the numbers will go down and the formula is recalculated based upon the counties that decide to continue to participate.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the 5 counties were to decide to do this, you would submit a letter of notice by March 1 of 2022 to HUD. HUD would then also ask the North Carolina Housing Finance Agency to certify the consortium, which that typically happens. And then you would submit a joint cooperation agreement. I've given a copy of one to the RAC that really shows how this works. After that's accepted by HUD by August 1, HUD would notify the consortium of approval, and then you get started with preparing a 5-year strategy of housing needs called a consolidated plan. That becomes your entryway into continuous funding. That is an analysis of all of your housing needs and how you're going to address them over the next 5 years. And you do an annual action plan every year with this funding. That annual action plan says, you know, we're going to get this amount of money and here's how we're going to spend it in eligible activities. You enter it into a computerized system. And once the funds start coming in, you're able to start doing housing projects or partner with outside developers to do those types of projects that will increase the supply of affordable housing or preserve existing housing in your communities. Some of the eligible things that have to happen, and I have to give these cautions, all of your activities have to serve persons or families whose income is 80% or less than the area median income. For your county, that's about $46,500 as the statutory cutoff for a family of four. So if you're a family of four and you make under that, you're eligible for funding. There is a 25% match. But as I tell everybody, there are a number of ways to look at match. It doesn't necessarily include cash all the time. In fact, for the 12 years that we did ours in Greenville, we never matched it with any cash. We had enough activities and other non-federal grants that were awarded that we were able to count as match, and the match rolled forward. So don't let the 25% match scare you. That is about $160,000 for the five counties. But it's likely that you'll have enough activities between the five counties that you will have to come up with very little, if any, financial match to the program. 15% of the funds do go to nonprofits called CHOTOs. That's off the top. That's a statutory requirement. So 15% of the funds do have to go to community housing development organizations working in your community to do affordable housing. Then you have a match of 10% can be used for administrative purposes. So here are some things that you can do. You can produce new units of affordable housing. You can rehab substandard housing in your communities. You can provide first-time down payment assistance for people buying homes in your community, rental assistance. And then the activities of the nonprofits have to be carried forward, and that has to meet the eligibility. If you've done CDBG before, it's very similar to CDBG. We are working on the possibility of finding funds to even prepare the consolidated plan. I think that's probably going to be $30,000. And I think we found a way to get that money for you if you decide to do that. But we'll know by the end of April on that. So it is about leverage. This gives you the ability to leverage dollars, outside dollars, to do housing. Let's show you some things that have happened. We did about, in my tenure with the city of Greenville, over 175 new units of affordable housing such as this. And we use home dollars to do that, to finance the construction with local contractors to build those and then sell them to individuals or families whose incomes are at or less than 80%. We rehabilitated existing structures that were dilapidated, and we made homeownership opportunities or improved the quality for the individuals that were living there. We built subdivisions. Following hurricanes, we used our funds to help people get into homes in subdivisions such as this, where we partnered with outside builders to build homes for first-time low and moderate-income home buyers. We built multifamily housing apartment complexes with multinational apartment construction. We put $450,000 of home dollars in this particular project, and this was 84 units of affordable housing here in Greenville. We put $150,000 in this project for Parkside Commons, which was for elderly low-income residents. And so we were able to use the home dollars to do those kinds of projects. So it really is an opportunity to really further this investment and leverage other dollars in your communities in their five county area to produce affordable housing. There are some steps. If you decide to do this, we must have all of the five counties to participate. We need really four, but it would be better to have five because that gets us to 657. I would urge you to include the municipalities in this discussion because we don't want them to not participate, because that could affect the 657,000, because that, if they decide not to, that's a population that's not used in the calculation. We would want to establish a lead entity. One of the five counties would serve as the lead entity, the receiver of the funds, the manager or the managee of the program and the operations. So you would establish a lead entity. You would do all of this through a joint cooperation agreement that you would enter into, similar as a memorandum of understanding and participation. And then you would submit all of this to HUD and get the process started. At the end of the day, whenever I used to do discussions with community groups about affordable housing, at the end of the day, it's about individuals like this. This family was a family in our community that really wanted to own their own home. They were working five jobs between the two of them, and they had this little bundle of joy, and they really wanted to establish some level of consistency for her because they wanted to build wealth and have a home. And so they did it. They did the hard work. And out of the 175 units that we did, I will tell you, people say, well, that's a lot of houses that you did in that short period of time. How many of them went to foreclosure? 12. So if you do the right things, you can enhance the lives of individuals like this that are hardworking in your community that need some consistency and decency in housing and help you lure economic development interests into your community. Okay, so I said it'd be brief. I'm going to stop sharing the screen and I'm going to sit back and answer questions if you have some for me.
Yes, Mr. Flood, excuse me. Mm-hmm. The $657,000,
yes,
that's for all five counties, if all five participate. How would it those funds be distributed, and would they be distributed equally amongst the five counties for once we had a project that we wanted to do, or say our project is $200,000+? Would we be eligible for the whole $200,000, or would we only be eligible for our share of the $657,000?
So here's where the program really is determined based on how you and all of the participants decide to pursue it. In Greenville, whenever I set it up, we would have a meeting of all of the seven members. And each, before we got our award, we would say, in Farmville, we have this need this year. And Aiden may say, we didn't have anything this year. So, you know, it's okay if Farmville gets a little bit more. And we would sit around the table in advance and decide. The answer is the consortium members will meet several times during the year. You'll know how much money you're going to receive. It's up to you all to decide how the money is divided amongst the five communities, the five counties. It may be that, as you said, Bertie County has a project and they need $200,000 this year. And maybe if Northampton and Martin say, you know, we don't have anything, whatever we would have, you know, we allocate to Bertie this year, knowing next year we may have something. So you decide how that money is spent within the consortium.
Could we bank the money and draw double next year?
Well, in a sense, you've got to spend what's allocated because HUD will only allow you to have no more than 1.5 times of your grant amount in the treasury, in the federal treasury. Then they start thinking you really don't need it. So you can bank it per se with the consortium, but you can't bank it in the federal treasury. You have to spend that money continuously.
You said we had a member already. Who is that?
Oh, you've got a rural advisory commission member that's advising on analysis of affordable housing. The consortium has not been set up yet, so you don't have a consortium member. The consortium isn't yet operating. It's really up to the five counties whether to proceed or not, and then you would identify a member for that consortium board.
Okay, thank you.
I'm trying to hear you. I'm sorry. Can I?
I think you advised it'd be approximately about $200,000 per county.
Well, if you decide to do a an equal split, it may be something like that. But really, right now, $657,000 is what the entire five county region would be eligible for.
Okay, but it's split five ways. If all five counties had something they wanted to do, correct?
You could do it that way if that's what you wanted to do, if that's how you decided to do it.
I'm just thinking about the amount of money that it takes to start some sort of project that you just demonstrated and showed on your video here is millions of dollars.
Right.
And if you're only getting $200,000, that's just a small pittance of what it would take to do that.
So the projects that I gave you examples of also had, remember I said it's layered financing. They had North Carolina Housing Finance Agency tax credits. And
I understand, but do you know that the North Carolina Housing Finance Agency will not give us the tax credits here in Bertie County due to the fact that we don't have a grocery store within 3 miles of where we could put a project at?
Well,
so we don't even qualify for that.
You know, and I guess it really depends on if you use that source or not. And I realize that there are a lot of requirements with the various programs. I've worked them probably for 25 years. So it really depends upon if that's the avenue of funding, you know, you choose to use, or you could use rural funds.
I mean, that's the biggest problem we have in Bertie County. I can say that now, especially West Bertie County. People have to drive 25 miles to a grocery store. So it is a food desert, as they want to call it on the technical terms. I call it food deprived. And also, if you're not within distance of 2 to 3 miles of a pharmacy, you don't qualify for any of these state tax credits from North Carolina Housing Finance Agency either, which is just federal money that's going into the North Carolina Housing Finance Agency. And then they have a committee that set these rules up, and that's how it's set. So in reality, I think what you're saying is that $200,000 what you get, but nothing as far as a developer coming in to be able to build and taking the tax credits, because I've done thousands of units in South Florida of apartments, and we take the state tax credits to offset the cost of the building, and that's where we make our profits from as a developer.
Okay.
We have many homes in Bertie County that need a new roof or need insulation or need siding, or so the big project that Commissioner Trent's speaking of would be absolutely wonderful. It's much needed. Affordable housing is much, much needed. But could this money be used for that new roof or insulation or whatever for these homes that are already existing?
Absolutely. You can do housing rehabilitation with the funds to preserve that housing. Yes. As long as the occupants are 80% or less than the area median income. Yes.
And Mr. Floyd, I don't want to get too far in the weeds. I know we're just talking about getting started up, but we do just need a good understanding of how things will work, you know, so that the commissions can make a decision. So with small projects like Commissioner Chair Lee was just mentioning, what will be the process for determining if it even qualifies, if we can get the money for that? Like, how stringent would the requirements be? Once we're given the money, what determines if a project will be covered with these funds?
So typically, to determine the eligibility of a project, I imagine if you've done any type of housing work in your community before, you make an assessment of the individual. You do an intake basically to qualify the house and the owner or the occupant to make sure they meet the requirements of eligibility, income, and that the funds that you spend, you know, that you're not over subsidizing the cost of the repair. And then you would do typically a work write up the issues and the deficiencies. You would bid it out to get qualified bidders to bid on the repairs. And then you would proceed with the work under sort of making sure you meet the state building code as well as housing quality standards for the rehab and do the repairs. Now, along the way, once or if you determine to pursue this, you would, HUD's going to have a variety of workshops to go through for if you're doing rehab, if you're doing new development, that you're going to want to have someone or a representative for you sitting in. And you may work with somebody, I don't know what your process now is, if you work with the Wooten Company or if you work with Mideast or whomever, you know, they would actually carry out that work for you, I imagine, if you don't do that in-house. So you would do a qualification of the occupant, the structure, bid it out, make sure you've got quality bidders, and proceed with the work, and then do the work.
Mr. Floyd, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Does the people that does the work, do they have to be a general contractor or a licensed trade person?
It's likely because of the amount of money that I've seen rehabs get into in the state building code, you're going to likely need a general contractor because the work,
put a roof on the house, the person had to be a general contractor to put a roof on the house?
No. I would defer to your building inspector because it depends on the complexity of the roof and what you find. So I want to be clear on that. It depends on what your building inspector says, but I recommend that you don't do individual work with just hiring out subs. You want one person to be responsible for that construction and they bring in the roofer. It gets to be a little bit difficult whenever you're just hiring subs out. That's just you lose some efficiencies that way.
Well, you wouldn't want someone, the homeowner that has no experience roofing, saying, I'm going to save a little bit of money and make me a little bit of money and put in my pocket and put my roof on myself with this money.
Absolutely not. You're right. You don't want to do that. And HUD will prohibit you from doing that. So that's why you want to do a work write-up and bring in someone that's qualified to do the work.
Mr. Flood, you mentioned the consortium board and how, I guess, each county's board of commissioners, would each board appoint someone? Like, what would be the makeup of the consortium board who would make decisions?
Yes. So for those that decide to participate in this, it will be up to the county commissioners and those that sign onto the joint cooperation agreement to identify someone to represent their interests. It may be a staff person. It may be, someone that has intimate knowledge of housing needs and programs in the various communities. Whenever we set it up, we let each participating member select somebody. And by far and large, they picked people that were knowledgeable about housing. We did have two city managers that were members of the consortium board that I ran. And so it really is up to the participating members to appoint someone that has the understanding of this work to the board.
You mentioned our towns, our municipalities. What role are they going to play in this?
I gave you some dollar figures and activities as far as participation. They would actually, if you want those areas to be considered as part of the consortium, they need to at least sign on to the agreement to agree that they support the efforts of, say, Bertie County to apply for these funds. That way, those populations are considered and included in the determination of funding, because you don't want to lose money by them saying, keep Windsor out. Windsor, that's your county seat. That's, you probably want them to be part of the consortium so that you get to capture those numbers in the formula so that you can get, you better your chances and better the amount of money that you get. And so they could actually have a seat on the consortium board if you choose, or they could just sign on for support.
In Pitt County, did any of the towns contribute to the funding?
Yes. We had seven. We had Pitt County, and then we had Aiden, Bethel, Farmville, Grifton, one other. It's been years. But when we did the consolidated plan, they all contributed to that. We had enough activities that, as I mentioned, we never came up with a dollar match because we had enough housing activities between the seven of us that we didn't need to come up with any cash. So they did participate financially with the consolidated plan, but after that, nobody had to come up with money.
And you said for this first year, because we have to have 750,000, it would be 93,000, is that?
That's correct. Yes.
But that's and that's all five counties giving amount. If all five counties get in.
That's right.
And that's a one-time thing.
That's correct. And that 93,000, could be divided between the five counties. If the municipalities want to participate, you could talk to them about participating in that $93,000 as well.
Okay. So just to be clear, it's not 93,000 for each county. It's together. is 93,000.
That's correct. Together, it's
and that could be reduced based on, or that is my question. Can it be reduced based on the matching things that are eligible to go towards that?
That can't. So that's the only thing that can't. But that 93,000 would be divided amongst the five participating members.
Gotcha. Okay. My next question is about back to the board for a second. I'm very interested in how the decision making is going to take place. So will each board just appoint one person? So there will be a consortium board of five members? Is that what I'm understanding?
That's the way we did it. Now, again, the beauty of design is up to the participants. If you get a lot of municipal participation and they'd like to have a seat, I would advise that you consider that. But it really is the people that sign on to the consortium agreement that really need to have membership on this body. And, you know, if you have others that say we support it, we'll sign on, but we don't need to have a seat on the board, you're in much better shape.
Well, Flood, okay, we talked earlier about qualifying. If, you know, if we don't have certain things, just like Commissioner Trent said earlier, if we don't have certain things that qualify us, how can we change the rules or change the policy? We will be eligible to meet the credentials.
Well, and some of, I guess, what the previous commissioner was discussing, you know, is beyond this program and our ability to change what the Housing Finance Agency does. I mean, obviously, you've got political connections. All of you are elected, you know, as the Housing Finance Agency talks about how to revise their program and their qualified allocation plan. I'd encourage you to share your concerns with them, to talk about the rule-based gap of funding with tax credit projects. That's probably the way to have some input into that process, but you can't, this program won't change that.
Yeah, and that was done 3 years ago through letters, also by phone calls and also by in-person conversations. And they said they could not change the rulings.
Yeah, we had the gentleman come to one of our commissioners' meetings prior to Mr. Robertson being appointed. And yeah, we've done our due diligence with that. And it's we've gotten nowhere. So yeah. We need to probably, if we as a board decide to join this consortium, probably need to look at the smaller projects that need to be done. It doesn't take long for you to ride around the county and see, you know, the different projects that could be used.
The need for housing in Bertie County is immense. I mean, you got 67% of your population here that are renting houses that are 60 years and older. And, you know, you're talking about rehabbing houses that are 60 years old. In reality, Mr. Flood, how much lifespan can you get out of a house?
You know, and I'm going to put that back to you. How much, let me ask you this, how much do you all receive now? And I'll put it this way. It really depends on how far and how much money you've got to spend, which will determine the lifespan of that home. You know, if it's too far gone, sometimes you have to do repair replacement or replacement housing. And so,
yeah.
It is a difficult blurred line, but
exactly.
How much money are you all receiving now?
Right. And that's the point I'm getting at. Once you get the $500,000 or $600,000 that you're speaking of split up amongst five counties, and you may get $200,000, that may be three houses, four houses. You know, it's you know, and again, yes, that's something, but again, you get into a situation where it's too little too late.
So this is
currently something for us to discuss and to think about, read over your materials. It's interesting to see.
And you said you're at East Carolina?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I would love to sit down one-on-one and talk to you about all this.
Yeah.
As far as how rural northeastern North Carolina and what the needs are in this area. And maybe there are programs out there that could fit our needs much better. And a developer that's highly interested in putting houses in right now. that is having such a hard time in doing this. Maybe there's something out there. Maybe there's something out there that we could talk about that would assist in the possibilities of this happening.
Okay. Well, certainly, this is just one program of potentially many for you all to consider. I, you know, don't envy the role that you have, but I just know from the municipal side, and everyone says there's a difference between municipal and county, and I do understand that, but we were very much in the position that you were some 30 years ago, not having anything to really, you know, make a dent, and the housing needs were continuing, and so this was one of the things that we used and begin to try to change the landscape for us.
Mr. Pine, how many counties have you presented to so far?
I'm doing all four this month. This is the very first one. So I will be talking with Martin County next week, and then the same week, Northampton, and then Halifax the following week. So I will be getting all of you this month. I think one is in June. Halifax is in June. So three this month, Halifax, and then Hertford, I think, in May sometime.
When will you need a decision?
Well, the May 1, 2022 date is really the hard date. Excuse me, March 1, 2022 is really the hard date for you all to decide, because by then you have to have a letter of interest into HUD if you decide to do this. And again, I want you to understand this is completely your decision as five counties. We're facilitating the discussion to give you options. It's really your decision as to whether you participate or not.
Who will continue to lead that consortium discussion if all five counties get in it and for the long haul? Will you continue to be with us?
I'll continue to provide outside advisement as we do. We try to engage with our communities here in Eastern North Carolina, east of I-95, to really talk about ways to make changes. You all will pick a lead entity, and that lead entity will likely, everything being out in the open, you're going to probably hire a program administrator through the consortium to administer the program, and they'll give you advisement. It may be someone like the Wooten Company, it may be the COG, the Mideast Commission, or someone like that will be your day-to-day person that's running and operating the program, unless one of the communities has staff that can dedicate their time to doing this. We will be glad to continue to give you advisement and give you programs that might be useful in this and other areas.
I have one more question for you, Mr. Flood.
Yes.
So the first year, again, all five counties at 93,000, how long can we expect to receive the six? Because it says, you know, we could, you know, annually, but how long could we expect to receive that 657 or up to that?
So what you're going to want to do with your joint cooperation agreement is you're going to ask for continuous funding. That means as long as the program is funded by Congress, you will have those funds. So the CDBG program has been going since 1974. This program has been in place since 1992. So as long as Congress continues to fund the program, and you know, from time to time you hear Congress is reconsidering this, that, or the other, this program has survived since 1992. Likewise, CDBG has survived since 1974.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you.
Give us much to think about and talk about.
Okay, very good. And Mr. Vaughn, I think you know of the meeting tomorrow. You have a representative there, but there'll be an opportunity with HUD tomorrow at 3:30 to answer additional questions.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We are at 11:41, and on the agenda it says 11:45 for a recess until 12:20. Yes, because we have an update from for the library and extension at 12:20. So if you will put everybody in the holding room, that would be great, Ms. Cartwright.
Yes, ma'am, Chili.
And I've asked them, I told them we were running ahead of schedule, so they'll be prepared to go at noon.
Okay. We're back in session. She has let everybody back in. It's 12:03. Next on our agenda, and the last item, is the Library and North Carolina Corporate Extension Facility Update by Project Architects Amber Idle and Danny Hoff. Amber or Danny, are y'all with us?
Hi, yes. Good afternoon.
Please, we're anxious to hear your update.
Awesome. So lots happened since I talked to you guys last. Pretty much everything's complete. We're really close. The parking lot was a huge milestone that happened last week. So I know everyone's excited about that. And good, wonderful. I think the only thing they hadn't finished was the signage, but we're supposed to be putting that up last night, as well as the pond fence. They were supposed to be getting that in last night as well. On the interior, Danny and I have created a punch list, which is a list of items that we've asked the contractor to correct to meet the contract documents. There's quite a few things on there. They've done a bunch of them, but there's still a few things hanging out that are delayed. Like the main thing I would say on the inside is the fire extinguisher cabinets. They've hung the extinguishers, but the cabinets are just on back order. So I know they're supposed to be in soon, but that shouldn't hold anything up as far as the building inspector. The window boxes that are built in, I believe they're on site today finishing that, which was like the major like unfinished item on the inside as well. So things are wrapping up this week, which is great. The building inspector was there on Monday and had a list of a few things he wanted to see complete before he would sign off. Most of them are not life safety. I don't really think any of them were life safety. The signs in the parking spaces is a thing that should have been installed, and so that's why they're working on that. But some like door hardware and a room sign. So Cheston is finishing those things up, and he's supposed to be back on Friday, like I said, to hopefully sign off on the certificate of occupancy at that point. And then this coming Monday, we will be back on site if everything goes to plan to look at the masonry and the outside of the building and create a list of any, you know, items we find out there that we'd like them to touch up or repair. And then at that point, you know, as soon as they've installed everything and we've created those lists, I think we'll feel better about, you know, giving our sign off. So at this point, we're still not quite to that point, even if the building inspector is ready. But I would say if they have us come punch next week, in the next couple of weeks, you know, we should be able to start moving everybody in.
Wonderful.
The main thing that we want to be careful about.
Whoever's talking, I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. The main thing that we want to be careful of as we're kind of tying up all these loose ends with the contractor is that we don't jump the gun and move in too soon before all of those loose ends can get wrapped up. A lot of times what we see happen is if we rush at the end and try and move in before the contractor is really fully done with the majority of the punch items, is it ends up kind of prolonging it more than we'd like it to. So that's just one of the things you just need to keep in mind when we make our decision about, or when you make your decision about when to officially open the doors to the building. And that's not to say staff can't move in. The books are already installed and that kind of stuff is happening. But we just want to keep a close eye on those punch list items and make sure that the contractor finishes as much as possible before we open the doors. Yeah, so if we, you know, go ahead and say open to the public, you know, and here's your punch list, they a lot of times will feel like, okay, well, I'll be back in a month to do this. And we don't want that to happen. We want to wrap it up for you guys and have it where they're not in your building, you know, and it's going to be business as usual. So,
right.
Yes.
Okay. About how far out would you say we are from the punch list being completed?
We are, like Amber said, probably within a week of the interior being completely done. The exterior is a different story. The typical process is when the contractor says they're ready for us to come inspect. That's when we go and do our punch list, so to speak. And that has not happened yet for the exterior. So it depends on what we see when we go on Monday. And how many of those loose ends they have tied up in the last week. So we can send you an update after we make that site visit and kind of give you a better idea of exactly what the contractor expects as far as timeline after we are able to do that exterior punch list.
All right. So after we take possession of this building, we still have a year to find stuff that needs fixing?
Correct. Yeah, we have, so that would be considered like a warranty item. And yes, from the date that we accept the project, we as in you and the architect, us in conjunction, that is what we call the final completion date. And then from that date, you have 12 months to, if there's anything that breaks or wears unusually fast or has malfunctions or issues, that's when we call the contractor and they come out and they fix it. Around the 11 month mark, we MHA will come back to the site and we will rock walk the building with the users and occupants, and we'll go through everything that might need to be addressed. And then it's kind of like another punch list that we do at that 11 month mark to catch anything that needs to happen before that year warranty expires. And then beyond the year, many of the products you have installed will have their standard material warranties. So like for the roof, for instance, has like a 15 year warranty, and paint on your steel has a 5 year warranty, stuff like that. So, you know, through the life of the building, if you guys ever have issues or concerns or something just isn't looking right, feel free to call us back. We're here for you for the life of the building, and we will help address any issues that might come up at any time through the building's whole entire life.
All right, sounds good. Any questions for Amber, Dan? Right. Well, we're excited. I rode out there last week and saw the parking lot was paved. I said, yay, progress, finally.
Yes. I'm very excited as well.
And I made a visit inside the building. It is actually gorgeous. So well done.
Great. Thank you very much. We think it looks beautiful, very colorful. Excited to get everybody moved in and open. So other than that, I think if you guys want to keep us updated on when you're interested in doing the ribbon cutting, and we'll kind of keep you updated too, so that, you know, we can do it once everybody's in, and you know, it'll be nice and pretty out, so that'll be good too.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we want to make sure our legislators, you know, can be there, and particularly Golden Leaf can be there.
Definitely. Yes. Awesome.
Once you get the CO, then we can give you that date.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
All right, so that is the end of the agenda. I would like to say, while I've got some public on the line, I guess I do. Do we have any public on the line, Ms. Cartwright? She has left the building.
So it looks like we have Just some employees.
Okay. Well, then I will not go with my announcement. Is there any other items that need to be brought to the board's attention?
I don't have anything other than provided you with legislative, our goals and our data maps in this publication. Really good information.
Okay. Right. They are planning to have a in-person conference for our North Carolina Association. Ms. Cartwright has the information, and so if you would like to attend that, it is August the 12th through the 14th, I believe. Please let Ms. Cartwright know so she can make arrangements for whoever decides they want to go to that. I did see where NACO, the National Association, was having an in-person too. It's confusing. They're having it in two different locations on two different dates, but yeah. I'm not interested in going to Arizona in July. That would be miserable. Yeah, way miserable.
I don't know, but first off, I need the chair and the vice chair.
Okay.
After the meeting for some signatures.
And come dressed to take a picture on the 26th, because we will be in our room, commissioner's room, and I want a new picture of the board as long as...
Wesson
can be with us, yes. I'd like to replace and make you official. All right. I will take a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? All in favor say aye. Thank you, gentlemen.